And Charles will come back and, well, some could say plague us, in the later 7th and 8th Crusades. Charles was the brother of St. Louis of France and an extremely ambitious man himself. And he was involved in the conquest of southern Italy from the descendants of Frederick II, the Hohenstaufen Emperor I mentioned earlier, who was the heir to the Norman Kingdom and the Holy Roman Empire. The papacy had found that crusade was also useful as a way of stirring armies to fight on behalf of papal political interests in Italy. And that's one of the consequences of 1204. That is, you can now extend crusade to a variety of operations. And Charles of Anjou was summoned in as the papal protector to take out the remaining Hohenstaufens in Italy. And in 1266, won a smashing victory at the Battle of Benevento in south-central Italy, which essentially ended Hohenstaufen rule and led to the papacy recognizing Charles as now the king of Sicily, that is, southern Italy and Sicily, which is, again, another remarkable demonstration of papal power. In effect, that crown was now transferred from the old Hohenstaufen family to what is known as the Angevin family, that is the family of Charles, who was the younger brother of the Capetian king of France, that is Louis IX. Charles, by becoming that king of the old Norman kingdom, also fell heir to all Norman ambitions. And so as Michael VIII had recovered Constantinople and had next on his menu the reconquest of Frankish Greece, and that's exactly what happened. Imperial armies moved into Thessaly, that is in northern Greece. The then reigning prince of Achaia, William II of Villehardouin, he was actually captured by Michael and had to negotiate and got released by giving Michael Mystra, which is medieval Sparta, in southern Greece, which became a base for the Byzantines to attempt a reconquest of the Peloponnesus. And these developments really frightened the Frankish lords to invite Charles of Anjou into Greece. And as I said, by 1267, Charles of Anjou not only had the invitation of the Frankish lords, Baldwin II, who is now a hopeless figure, he for some reason remembered an Italian opera. There's a strange operas about him looking for money in later times. Well, Baldwin II had sold his rights off, in effect, to Charles. And Charles had in mind, well, we'll go to Frankish Greece, we'll help out them, receive their submission, and then do what all Norman kings would do, is they become Emperor of Constantinople. Unfortunately, Charles got detained. He was busy fighting in Italy and in Sicily. And what he didn't bank on was first his own unpopularity among his Italian subjects, which was extensive. And second, the political duplicity and brilliance of Michael VIII, that irrepressible usurper who had seized Constantinople. Michael might have had everything wrong strategically, but when it came to tactical diplomatic maneuvers, Michael VIII is on the order of Bismarck. Somehow, Michael bribed and convinced the Normans in Sicily and their subjects to rise in rebellion and butcher the French, the so-called famous Sicilian Vespers, and invite Peter of Aragon in as their king. This operation came off in 1282. It was the result of years of diplomatic checks on the Angevins that Michael had paid for, including pretending that he was going to reunite with Rome so the Pope wouldn't give his blessing to any ventures by Charles. And the result was Charles of Anjou never left Italy. He lost Sicily, and politics in Italy became more complex. And the lords of Greece, the Frankish lords of Greece, remained in this precarious situation, hoping for more Western aid and always living in the shadow of Constantinople. And this would dictate the relationship through the 14th and 15th century. And eventually, Byzantine forces in Mystra would reconquer and take over Frankish Greece. Well, in some ways, that was unfortunate because it brought to a close a really very successful, in some ways, a very successful Crusader settlement in Greece, in central and southern Greece, and substituted for it an attempt at restoring imperial rule when there really weren't the means to do so. And the result is that what was remembered in the 13th century of the struggle between Byzantines and Western Europeans is not the experience in Frankish Greece so much, but the experience of trying to retake that capital city. And everything that implied, that is the humiliation that there was a Latin-speaking emperor, that the Venetians had monopolized high office. And this is what is going to be remembered, and this is what's going to infect imperial policy. And as we shall see in the next lecture, Michael VIII, and particularly his son, Andronicus II, the man who had to pay the bills, got a capital that couldn't serve as the center of any kind of state. And as the last emperor of Constantinople in the distant future, 250 years from now, Constantine the 11th said when he became emperor in 1448, Constantinople really needed a good mayor rather than a Byzantine emperor. And I think that's the only way to close with the political legacy of this fighting had brought.